I'm Mike Rhodes, editor-in-chief with MuncieJournal.com, and today I have the opportunity and distinct pleasure to interview Steve Lindell, director of news operations for Wolfpoon Radio. And Steve just came back from a trip to Arua, Uganda. Mm-hmm. Let's start out by, Steve, why don't you go ahead and tell us why Uganda, and what's the backstory on that?
Yeah, Mike, I appreciate you doing this. I've gotten a lot of questions, as you might imagine, about this effort. I'll start with the start of it. Our owner, Jay Chapman, is associated with one of the co-founders of Radio Pachas, a radio group in northern Uganda. And Sherry Meyer is her name. She's from Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, 30-plus years ago, she moved to Arua, Uganda, as a missionary to help the people of that area for lots of reasons and lots of purposes. Well, they founded this radio group there because there is little or no media and way to communicate. There's no newspapers. There's no television stations anywhere nearby. There certainly wasn't any radio station. So communication and helping people in any way, shape, or fashion in communication purposes like that didn't exist before Radio Pachas. Well, when our owner got with Sherry Meyer, they had the idea of how about and what would it be like if we had counterparts at our radio group, Wolfpoon Radio Group here in East Central Indiana, interact, have conversations with the similar job people at Radio Pachas. So for about a year and 7 months, maybe a little longer than that, we have been doing that. We've been doing it, Mike, through ways that you would imagine, the telephone, of course, Teams meetings, Zoom meetings for video component. And that's all well and good, and we've been able to share and communicate a lot of different items and things and subjects and topics. But Jay Chapman wanted one of us to volunteer to go there and visit and meet face-to-face. And several of us raised our hands, and I was selected as being our representative for Wolfpoon Radio to make this journey. So that's how the journey came to pass, and maybe some of your other questions will have to do with what we covered when we were there. A lot of it had to do, as you imagine, with radio, but even more of it, Mike, had to do with life and surroundings and the differences and even the similarities between here in the good old USA and there in the continent of Africa.
Well, you know, one of the things I was interested in asking you is, I'm sure there's a story to this. I've heard a little bit about it, but okay. How does one get to Arua, Uganda? What was the process there? I understand Arua is 7,449 miles away from here.
Wow.
And that's farther than Ed Ball's trip to the North Pole, which I looked up, which is only 3,160 miles. So,
wow.
How did you get there?
Okay, here's the flight plan that we had put together from Indianapolis to Chicago. At Chicago, a quick layover. They lost my luggage. Story about that separately. From Chicago, you fly to Brussels, which I believe is a 9.5-hour flight in and of itself. At Brussels, your next leg is to Entebbe. That's about 10.5 more hours in the air. And then at Entebbe, you can either take a bus or some other road transportation the rest of the way to Arua, Uganda, where Radio Pachas headquarters is, or you can do what they did for me, which is arrange for a charter flight, a small prop plane that holds, I don't know, 8 or 10 people. They did that for me. Now, in order to get on that plane, which doesn't fly every single day, as I understand it, I had to stay overnight with Kenny, who operates a hotel, kind of a bed and breakfast sort of a thing. He picks you up at the airport. He gets you to where you have a nice place to sleep that's clean and safe and whatever. And then the next morning, you get up early and you go back and grab that last flight. The small plane, have you ever been on a really small plane before?
I have,
okay.
Yes.
As I walked up to the small plane, and I'm not afraid of flying by any stretch, but they looked at me and kind of raised an eyebrow, Mike, and they said, they pointed at me and they waved me over and they said, "You You need to go to the front of the plane because we need to balance the weight. True story. And I didn't mind. As long as it's going to be safe, sound, and secure, what do I care? And I'm in the front seat of the plane for all intents and purposes. I was in first class, though there was no such thing on this tiny little plane. I could have reached forward, Mike, and pushed some sort of button on the console. I'm not qualified to fly a plane, so I did not reach beyond the imaginary line to the pilot's seat there.
Well, at least you got there safely.
Yes.
You referred to your luggage a little while ago. Tell me what happened there.
We're not exactly sure where it got lost. Sherry Meyer and I think it got lost in Chicago because of the quick turnaround, the connection flight. We don't know for sure. But it was the ninth day in Arua, Uganda, that my suitcase finally arrived at the front entrance to Radio Pachus. So for those that may have seen some pictures, photographs, or videos or whatever, you included, by the way, where you said I looked really tired the first couple of days.
I sounded tired.
You're right. I was wearing the same shirts many of those days. That's why. I was rotating what I had in my little carry-on bag. Nancy took care of that. She said, you know, what if they lose a bag? So thankfully she had it planned out in that fashion.
Well, you and I had talked about that before you left. I said, you know, you might lose your luggage. And that happened. So, okay, you're there safely. You've got to meet the folks that you're there at Radio Pachus.
Yep.
Early on, you posted a photograph of a large group of people, maybe 40 or 50 people outside doing something. Do you remember that? And what was going on there?
Absolutely. That was either the first full day or maybe the second full day that I was there in northern Uganda. We are at, in the photograph, what they call a listening session. And what you see in the photograph from the perspective of the one you're showing me right now is a bunch of people sitting in the shade of a tree. There's no air conditioning there, basically, to speak of. And it's hot, and it's hot and humid most days. So shade is really important. In fact, if the sun ever gets you, like the shade moves throughout the day, right? Somebody is always looking out for you and say, oh, I see the sun is hitting you there. Would you like to slide to the side a little bit to get back in the shade? This is a listening session at a Simbili camp is the name of this one. Rhino Camp Simbili, more specifically. These are all refugees. And this is called a settlement, one of many in northern Uganda and other parts of the African continent. These people, Mike, have all fled their own homeland within Africa because there are people with guns. There is ethnic cleansing. There is all sorts of unrest in various parts of Africa. And these people have left everything behind in their own hometown and just fled. And what Uganda does is they give them safe haven. They give them an area at one of these settlements to put up a little, we would call it a house. They would call it a home, but it's more likely a grass hut. If it's even that. And they give them a small piece of land next to their grass hut sort of a thing where they can grow some food. They give them, northern Uganda gives them some provisions to start off with, rations. And as they are there, the longer they are there, the rations are decreased because the government there assumes that they can be more self-sufficient. So they give them less rations, thinking that they can grow their own and or fend for themselves just a little better. So in this photograph, you see Radio Pachus people, and in the background, the Radio Pachus vehicle that we drove to get there on the roughest, most terrible roads you've ever encountered in your life.
Is that for remote broadcasting, that vehicle, like that, we would have?
Yeah, and in the back of it, the equipment loaded in, as far as like a PA system, you see mic stands and microphones and lots of cords and so forth and a recording device. They invite these refugees up to the microphones to tell Radio Pachus and Radio Pachus listeners what's wrong, what's right, what's problematic, what are you worried about? And then they take all that audio, they post-produce it into radio programs that air on their four Radio Patches stations with the semblance and the idea, rather, of giving the community the ability to hear these voiceless refugees. So they're giving voice to the voiceless. Now, within this photograph also, there are, as we learned during the session, there's kind of four different chunks of people that all speak different languages, that are all from different countries or parts of countries, and some of them don't historically necessarily get along in their own country, but they're all plopped down in these settlements, again, for safe haven, and they all are sort of expected, and they all need to get along. They all speak different languages, too. That's another totally huge component to something that I didn't understand, how complex it is for them to communicate with each other. And Radio Patches, as you might understand and believe, right, has several staff members that speak these different languages and or dialects within the languages so they can communicate to whomever they're trying to broadcast to.
Did you feel safe while you were there, and why? Because you're a large white man in the midst of this area, and something new for them.
Yeah, that's been asked a lot. Yes, I did feel safe, all but maybe one or two instances, and I'll share that with you. But let me deal with the last part first. I kept hearing the word Mzungo. The word was Mzungo.
Mzungo.
Pretty close.
Okay.
I practiced it a lot, so you may have been closer than me. And I asked one of the Radio Patches people, I said, what does that mean? They're clearly saying that of me. And they kind of smiled, and they said, it's a white man, basically, translated. There's not a lot of white men walking around northern Uganda, so I was clearly an outsider. But you know what, Mike? You asked me about the safety question. I didn't feel safe or insecure, but those one or two instances, which I'll get back to, what they typically would do more often than not, big wide eyes, because they would see me and I didn't look, you know, like everybody else. And then when I would say hello and smile in English, they would smile ear to ear, put their hand on their heart typically, and say hello in their own language, and welcome, and we're so glad you're visiting. They were also sweet and kind and nice. And these are people that have little or nothing in their lives as far as what we would consider to be stuff and things and possessions and so on. The one instance where I did feel uncomfortable, and again, this is one of those things that works out to be a similarity to us in the U.S. and what we have here, too. I was coming out of a mass on a Sunday, and outside of the mass, there was a man who was clearly yelling very loudly outside of the church during the service. He came up to me face to face, got very close, and was screaming at me at the top of his lungs in his own language. I didn't know what he was saying, and I didn't know exactly what was going on. I felt a little insecure, a little unsafe, but shortly thereafter, I don't know, five or six of the parishioners of that church saw what was happening, heard what was happening, came out, and they very gently got between he and I to separate us just a little bit. And I found my way to the other side of the church, and that gentleman continued saying what he was saying loudly to whomever he could find. Aside from me, he found someone else to talk to or yell at. Well, here's the similarity. They explained to me that he's a bit of a regular and that he has some mental health challenges, and that he was speaking in gibberish, not in any known language, and he was just having some troubles dealing with whatever he was dealing with. Now, what we have here in the U.S., in some instances, we have a place, hopefully, in some cases, where somebody with mental health challenges might be able to go and get some help. I know Muncie, for instance, and you know this too, trying to create a mental health facility within the city of Muncie structure, you know, that we've covered that and so on. They don't have any of that there. They don't have any of that. So that guy is left to fend for himself and everybody that interacts with him is also left to fend for themselves. I don't know that he was dangerous in any way, shape, or fashion, but
sure.
In answer to your question, it was one of the very few moments where I felt just a little unsure.
Sure. Well, let's talk about radio a bit, since that's why you went over there, to kind of compare and contrast what's going on. So how do they do radio differently over there, or don't? Because I looked at their website, Radio Podcast, and they had a huge amount of staff there. I don't know where they found all those people, but tell me how the radio's different or similar.
The Radio Podcast group is funded in part by some churches. But the vast majority of their programming, Mike, is secular. It's not churchy. They do have some masses. They do have some Bible readings. They have things like that built into their programming matter. But the vast majority of it is the programming is what they call presenters. We would call hosts or anchors or news reporters. They have reporters too, but. Their presenters are talking about issues and interviewing people. They have a lot of guests, talk shows. They have music shows, too, where they play songs. I can talk about that separately, too. But they have shows where they're talking about safety issues. They're talking about social issues, environment issues, things to keep people informed about government and corruption. Oh, my heavens. They said the word government corruption, those words a lot. They have that to deal with. While I was there in the couple of weeks that I was there, one of their reporters was assaulted by a local politician. They were doing a story about some allegations.
He didn't like it.
No, he didn't. They were asking some very fair questions, and the political person, allegedly, assaulted that reporter. From Radio Patches, and that is something else that is unique in regards to the danger situation that they deal with. So that's a broad brushstroke of some of the programming that they do, how they set it up.
Sure. I just got two more questions for you.
Sure.
And, you know, anytime people think of Africa, you know, they're thinking of some of the animals there.
Hmm.
Did you see any animals? Are they close to you, or what was that like?
There is a national forest, which is a few hours drive from where we were based in Arua, Uganda, and I got to go on safari. They called it. Now, when people hear the word safari, they think it's people with muskets and pith helmets and whatever, and they're hunting for animals. No. We were looking and taking pictures, and that's not what happens there. I saw lots of giraffes. I saw a rhino underwater drifting. He didn't come up, but I saw him. Elephants, they were having their lunch, Mike. Ooh, they are big eaters, man. Wow. And they were huge elephants. They had walked out into many feet offshore of a river, perhaps you've heard of it, the Nile.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They were in the Nile, and they were eating brush off of a drifting confluence of driftwood and brush and weeds and stuff, and they were hungry, so that's what they were eating.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
We did not see lions. We did not see the cats. The cats were not out. They were hiding, but they were there. And some other, they weren't like deer and they weren't antelope, but they were local indigenous type of animals like that, that were just fantastic. So he got a million pictures of the animals too.
Kind of to wrap up just a little bit, having spent a couple of weeks over there in sort of poverty, would you say it, poverty stricken?
I think that's safe to say,
so,
yes.
Of all the things that you saw over there and comparing it to the United States, what are you thankful for now?
Everything, Mike. Everything. I told everybody that would listen, including Nancy, the first day that I was there, that I will never complain about anything ever again. Our roads, you know, we have potholes and we have infrastructure problems that everybody has. We have... you know, the electricity might go out here after a storm, right? And we get so mad. You know, you've done this, haven't you? Gone to the light switch and you flip it and you go, oh, dang it, it's out again. Mm-hmm. And it's back usually within the hour or a couple of hours.
Right.
But their electric grid, may I use the word sucks? Can I say that during the interview?
I guess you did.
It does.
Okay.
It is so antiquated and poorly constructed. It just goes off. It just turns off with no warning. It's not because of a storm. It just turns off. And even when it's on, the amps, is that what it's called, vary so greatly because the system is so badly constructed that you could have something plugged into a socket somewhere if you were fortunate enough to have that, which not many do. And it can just blow stuff up. I mean, computers and light bulb or whatever is very susceptible with the way their electric grid is. Radio Pachus wisely put up a huge solar field. There's a lot of sun in northern Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to capture that sun's energy. In fact, they have an overage for their campus where the radio stations are housed, which, by the way, is housed by a brick wall and then razor wire on top of it because they have to protect all of that gear. Can you imagine if somebody that was desperate saw all of this gear, these solar panels, which could probably be repurposed and sold for money for somebody else, the computers and the generators and the everything else that a radio station needs to stay on the air and communicate to people, mm-hmm. All of that stuff is susceptible. If I was a business person that could start a razor wire company, I might move to northern Uganda because there's a lot of that, because there needs to be, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of desperate people. But I don't want to make it sound like it's a grief-stricken, poverty hole situation. It's not. The amazing thing to me, Mike, is in light of everything I've explained to you during this interview and so many more stories too,
sure,
these people are still happy. They still are able to find joy. They still looked at an Mzungu and said, welcome. We're glad that you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able and seem to be able to take solace in the smallest thing. So you asked me earlier what I learned with respect to maybe some, my words, life lessons or whatever. We, Americans.
Thankfulness.
Thankfulness. We are so spoiled. We have it so amazingly great. Yes, we have struggles. We have trials and tribulations. We have bickering. We have political disagreements and on and on and on. But we have so much to be thankful for in the United States of America. I am so grateful for having had the opportunity to make that trip and see it firsthand. I'm even more grateful that we know firsthand that there are radio broadcasters which are doing the incredible work that they are doing in the way they are doing it for the benefit of the citizens of not just northern Uganda, but all of these people from all over Africa that are coming in there to try and survive and hopefully thrive. But the definition of thrive that you and I might have is not necessarily the same they have.
Sure. Well, it kind of sounds like this experience has kind of changed you a little bit.
I believe that is an accurate statement, 100% mine. Mm-hmm.
Steve has some fascinating things to say about his trip, as you have just heard, and he's kind of going on a speaking engagement tour. So if you want to talk about just briefly where you're going to talk.
Yeah. As we are sitting right now, I've had inquiries from a Kiwanis group, from a Rotary group. I've spoken to an unofficial group of business people and political folks. There's a Friday morning meeting each Friday at 9 a.m., Coffee with Bill, and several others, too. In fact, I'm wide open to share experiences with anybody that wishes to hear about them, and you'll probably put an email address within the content of the post here or something like that.
Right.
Happy to do it.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to interview.
Yeah, glad to do it. Thanks for asking.
Well, it's a fascinating thing that you were able to do. And thanks for the time today.
Honored to have done it and honored always to speak to the likes of you, Mike Rhodes.
That's right. Mike Rhodes, editor-in-chief of MuncieJournal.com. Thank you very much.